Steve started last week explaining that we're going to be talking over the next few weeks about our minds, this wonderful, creative, not quite fully understood thing that governs our emotions, our beliefs, and our sense of who we are. This was meant to be the first one in the topic, so we're going to take a little step back and we're going to look at why we've chosen to talk about our minds. As we're talking about the mind, we're obviously going to be talking about mental health, so I do want to give a trigger warning here. I will be touching on the topic of suicide, so if that is difficult, if that's going to raise some difficult thoughts or emotions for you, please switch off or head out the back there and just come back when you feel ready. I also need to caution that no one who's speaking in this series is an expert. Anyone who is concerned about mental health, either their own or someone they love or someone they know, should seek medical help. The help that's out there is really good, and no one should feel anxious about accepting help, whether it's a talking therapy or medication. Just as we wouldn't ignore a broken leg, we shouldn't ignore our mental health. They're both equally important. But unfortunately, the stigma surrounding mental illness is widespread in society. I work for a charity, and one of the things that we do is mental health awareness training. And one of the activities we do at the start of those sessions is we ask people to come up with the negative words they know about mental illness. Usually we get through several flip chart pages very quickly. The words just flow. And then we ask them to think about all of the positive words about mental illness. And then we get to the tumbleweed moment. And there's 5 minutes of awkward silence. I'm going to spare you that. There's only normally two that come up, and they're eccentric and quirky. And at times, I think we need to acknowledge that the church, the broad church, has absorbed some of that stigma about mental illness as it exists in wider society. And it's worth just acknowledging that at times the church, not Life Church, the broad church, has not been always been a welcoming place for people who have a mental health challenge. Rest assured, I am going to use the Bible shortly. This is a preach. I do know the rules. But first of all, we're going to have a little audience participation. So you'll need your squares of coloured paper that you got when you came in. I was trying to work out how to. I was thinking about standing up and sitting down. And I just thought, no, let's go coloured paper. So there are some questions. Oh, my slides have vanished. This is like this morning when I realised that my printer had decided to cut off diplomatic relations with the laptop and it wouldn't print the first page. For some reason, it printed the other 20 pages, but not that one. So, we've got a question. In any given week, how many people will experience a common mental health problem, such as depression, stress, or anxiety? 1 in 30, team yellow. 1 in 12, team blue. 1 in 6, team pink. Oh, we've got a bit of a... Oh, I think you're all right. Pink, team pink. So that was in a given week. Next up, same question, but in a different, in a given year. So over the course of a year, how many people will experience a common mental health problem? Oh, there's quite a few blues. If you're holding blue, you're right. It's getting quite competitive, actually, down on the front row here. Is this what teachers call a behaviour challenge? Do I have to send them out of the room now? First warning. Do we still have the red, amber, and green lily pads? Do I stick them on a? Oh, okay. You first warning, guys. Next question. This is 2018-19, so this is one financial year. What percentage of working days were lost due to stress, depression, or anxiety? Okay, there's quite a few yellows, I think, here. It's actually 54%, it's C. So that's over half of days in one financial year were lost due to mental ill health. Can we get back to look at COVID now? What proportion of people developed moderate to severe depressive symptoms during COVID-19? 1 in 10, 1 in 8, 1 in 6. It's 1 in 8. Team Blue. This is from NHS data. How many prescriptions for antidepressants were given out in 2020? Oh, there's a bit more thinking going on about this one. I really can't call this one. And you're cheating, Stephen. 78 million. So that's more than one per head of population. I'm just trying to illustrate the scale of the problem. And now we've got some quite sobering statistics. I have borrowed these from work. We have an amazing mental health coordinator called Jo who puts these infographics together, so I've just borrowed a couple. She does know. Thank you for getting involved so enthusiastically, by the way. I've got some quite sobering statistics up here. So this is just for England and Wales. In 2020, there were 5,224 registered suicides. Just a little note about terminology. We do talk about suicide or taking your own life, not committing suicide, because that harks back to the days before the 1961 Suicide Act, when if you didn't actually manage to kill yourself, then you could be prosecuted. So that was a great time. Across both sexes, suicide rates are highest in the 45 to 50 age group. And as you can see from that left-hand corner, three-quarters of those who took their own lives in 2020 were men. And in fact, the leading cause of death for men under 50 isn't cancer or road traffic accidents, it's suicide. Globally, this equates to 700,000 suicides annually. That's one person every 40 seconds. Every suicide represents another 20 attempts. That's 14 million attempts across the world. That's one attempt to end someone's life for every 10 babies that are born in the world. And it's the 17th leading cause of death worldwide. Now, when you think that that is competing with things like malaria, war, malnutrition, and infectious diseases, it just shows how big the problem is. But the problem may be even graver for our young people. So this is a 2017 NHS survey, and it found that 1 in 9 young people had a diagnosable mental health condition. And they repeated that survey in 2020. It's now 1 in 6. Now we have a dozen or so people in our youth group. So this means that on average, 2 of those have a diagnosable mental health condition. It's clear we have a mental health epidemic on our hands. And that's why it feels good now to tackle this, to acknowledge that and to suggest some things that might help. At the start, I talked about stigma. When 1 in 4 of us have some form of mental health episode in a given year, we have to seriously dismantle outdated beliefs about mental health somehow being linked to a moral or a spiritual weakness or failure, and accept that it's a product of a fallen world and an enemy who will do anything to stop us fulfilling our God-given potential. We all live on a continuum of mental health. We all have, I have warned the broadcast team I'm going to do this. We all have days when we're on top of the world. We're over here. Life's great. We can take on anything. I think for parents, that's called 9:15 on the back to school day. For teachers, that's probably called 3:30 on the Friday they break up. But we all have times when we're over here and we're good. Life's good. We can tackle anything. And then we start to get over to this end. And we all have days when we're up at night overthinking something. We're gripped by anxiety or stress. We just can't see a way out of the situation we're in. Or life feels hopeless. We are all, every day, somewhere on this continuum. We're none of us exempt. And that's why we need to address this. I said I would eventually open the Bible, and 16 slides in, we're here. So my text is this really well-known passage about the armour of God. Stand firm then, with the belt of truth buckled around your waist, with the breastplate of righteousness in place, and with your feet fitted with the readiness that comes from the gospel of peace. In addition to all this, take up the shield of faith, with which you can extinguish all the flaming arrows of the evil one. Take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God. This is a powerful image of all the ways that we can protect ourselves from our enemy who prowls around looking for ways to attack us. I'd like to focus on the flaming arrows and the shield. Now, the word for flaming arrows in this passage, and this is the great theological college known as Google, it describes a hollow reed, something like bamboo. And what they would do, they would put a stopper at one end, and then they would fill it with a flammable liquid, and put a wick and another stopper in the other end. They'd then light the wick and fire it off. Now, they weren't aiming it at buildings particularly or flammable surfaces. They were actually aiming it at the soldiers. Because what happened was this missile would fly through the air, burning as it went. And when it landed, the wick and the stopper would come out. The liquid would pour out and immediately ignite. So it's quite a serious problem if you're a soldier on the receiving end. Now, clearly, we're not regularly assaulted by blazing arrows as we pop to Costa for lunch, and the sky doesn't usually rain down fire when we take the dog for a walk. So what's being described here is not a physical fire, but a fire in our minds. In reality, these darts are things like an unhelpful thought which sparks off anxiety, which we can't shake off at 4 o'clock in the morning. Fear of something we can't control. Stress about the future. A doubt. Will we be liked? Will we fit in? What will people think of us? Or a comment, perhaps said in all innocence, but dissected at length in the wee small hours as we ponder all the things it might and probably didn't mean. Just like the flaming darts, these thoughts and the way we process them set small fires in our minds, which grow. They make us doubt our worth, our value, the good we're doing. They make us feel that we don't deserve to succeed, or maybe that we'll never succeed. I'd like to touch briefly on one relatively new flaming arrow on the block: social media. Back to a few stats facts. This one surprised me. The fastest growing demographic on Twitter is grandparents. So there's some good stuff out there. And it's social media's proved immensely helpful during the pandemic, connecting people who would otherwise have experienced real isolation. And the potential for connection is enormous. This slide, what this is it's a population list. So if Facebook, YouTube, and WhatsApp were actually countries, they would be ahead of the most populous countries in the world, China and India. Followed by Facebook Messenger, WeChat, which is massive in China, and Instagram. Special prize for anybody who knows what the penguin is. It's Tencent's QQ platform, which is huge in China. If you scroll down this list to get to the United States, you'd have to go down to 14th place. It's behind Twitter and Reddit, just ahead of Snapchat, although this is 2020 stats, so it's possible that Snapchat has pushed the USA down into 15th place. So the possibility of connection is enormous. So it's not something that, as Christians who are here to spread salt and light in the world, it's really difficult for us to ignore it. Sometimes the connection goes incredibly well. 1 in 3 new marriages started online. Just hold a moment. I just want to ask another question. Oh, hopefully, did anybody see that? Okay. What percentage of new purchases, big purchases, things like cars, houses, weddings, that sort of thing, what percentage of those do you think are influenced by social media? Sorry? Okay, go on. It was a last minute change. I thought I'd involve you a little bit more. 93%, that's staggering. Apparently, for those who don't use social media, their grandkids and their kids do it for them. So this includes things like reviews, recommendations, paid adverts, influencers. But 93% of the big things we buy, the big ticket items, are influenced in some way by social media. 73% of millennials found their last job on a social media platform. But they probably should be careful, because 70% of employers check social media before they offer a job. And 36% of employers confess to have either not having made or having withdrawn a job offer as a result. So, young people, lock your profiles down. But as I said, I describe this as a fiery dart, so there is a downside. This quote is from research by the Education Policy Institute and the Prince's Trust. So this is UK data. And they found a significant relationship between heavy use of social media at age 14 and self-esteem issues and higher psychological distress at age 17. We really do need to equip and guard our young people. This comes from Facebook itself. This was a quote obtained by the Wall Street Journal. I know not the legality of it, but they've published it so they can pay the fine when Facebook sue them. 32% of teenage girls said that when they felt bad about their bodies, Instagram made them feel worse. If you're the devil and you're looking to set fire to someone's self-esteem, you no longer have to limit yourself to comparison with girls in your school, girls in your town. You have the whole of Instagram at your disposal. And it's not just women and girls, men too. 40% of men feel under pressure, apparently, to have the perfect body, and 50% of them cite social media for this pressure. Excuse me. And so we're back to the armor of God. We know what our flaming arrows are, but what about our defense? What is our defense? Well, this scripture tells us that it's the shield of faith. I have a shield here. Thank you. Hebrews 11:1 tells us that faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. It's more than just a feeling. To have faith is to believe that God created the world and that our value is his son's life. It's belief that our value and our worth are set by God, not by how many likes we have, how many friends we have who appreciated the last post we made. And it's important to realize that things like doubt, fear, stress, and anxiety are attacks from the enemy. Stress and anxiety can knock us off course. Doubt and fear can prevent us from even setting sail in the first place. Taking up this shield of faith will protect us, and the sword of the Spirit, the Word of God, will allow us to fight back against these attacks and achieve what God has set out for us to do. So let's take a closer look at this shield. The Roman shield could be as large as a door. I've got a fairly small representation here. It was made of wood covered with leather, and a soldier could hide their whole body behind this shield. But despite the size, they were highly mobile and they could be moved around to defend the soldier from wherever the attack was coming from. We can do this with our shield of faith, counteracting the fiery darts of the enemy with things that are true because we believe what God says about us. So I've been loaned this shield as an illustration today. You can tell that the family I loaned it from have boys, because when I asked their mum if I could borrow one, she said, "I'll find you the least battered one." The flaming arrow might say, "Who do you think you are? You'll never achieve that." But our shield of faith and our sword replies, "I can do everything through Christ who strengthens me." The flaming arrow says, "You're not as popular as she is." And our shield replies, "I'm God's workmanship." This is where I need an extra hand. The flaming arrow will accuse and bring fear. But our shield and our sword reply, "I have direct access to the throne of grace through Jesus Christ." These are a few statements that are taken from a list of statements which you're going to receive along with the weekly starter. They're all true, and you can use them to deflect the attacks of the enemy. We'll be using them in life groups this week as well. But we don't stand alone. Can I have that image back up? As well as providing mobile protection, Roman shields could actually be locked together to form an impenetrable barrier. I tried to find a picture, and this is the only kind of royalty-free one I could find, but you can just about make out. They've got shields around them, and they've got shields above them. Basically, they would cover each other from every side, almost like a sort of a tank. In fact, the phrase, "I've got your back," has its origins in sword and shield fighting, when warriors would fight back to back to protect each other's unprotected side. Just like the Roman soldiers, as the church, we can help each other by joining forces. We have life groups who can help, full of people just like you and me, fighting the same battles against our enemy that you are. Literally, your life group can have your back. We've also got a pastoral team who can help you too. I'm going to wind up now because I'm running over time, and this has been a whirlwind of statistics, and I'm quite aware that for some of you this might have been quite difficult to listen to. So I'm going to finish by saying, if you'd like prayer for any reason, if this has raised something for you or you just want to be covered in prayer, please let us know after the meeting ends. If you're watching online, please head to the website and contact us via the prayer button and someone will get in touch with you. If you'd like to join a life group, Gordon already did an epic advert for his. There are lots of life group leaders here who can talk to you about what their life group is like. So just let a leader know or one of the welcome team, and they'll introduce you to someone. Thank you for listening.